I've spent a lot of time the last couple of weeks, working on getting this awesome series on the Ten Commandments together. Now, there's lots to think about. So it all got me to thinking about laws. That's what we're dealing with the Ten Commandments. They're laws that God gave. When you look at the Ten, it seems pretty simple, doesn't it? And when you consider what Jesus is saying to us in this passage from Mark, it should be simple. But us human beings like to make things complicated. And we'll take something that's awfully simple and easy to follow and make it incredibly complicated. I think we do that because so many of us people try to find exceptions, try to say, well, that law doesn't apply to what I'm doing. It all depends on what the meaning of is. But whatever law we're talking about, that law probably does apply, at least in spirit and intent. So every time a new situation comes up, instead of referring back to the simple principle, because people think first of themselves, we got to write a new law. Here's an example that you all need to know about why that's true. Now, I doubt any of you have ever heard these figures before, but you can easily look them up online. That's where I got them from. The Constitution of the United States of America is 11 typewritten pages. Normal type, normal size paper. Like that. I know that because I looked at that document, I pulled it up before I printed it, and the computer dialogue said 11 sheets, 8.5 by 11. Basically, it's a good term paper. But do you know how many pages there are in the U.S. Code, the Code of the United States, the Code of Law for our country with all the federal laws in it? There are 43 titles to the code, and each title has subdivisions. Some titles can be put together with several other titles into one bound book. But there are other titles so big that they span multiple books. Think encyclopedia here. The official printing office version runs to more than 30 volumes. And get this, that's more than 200,000 pages of laws. Now that's just the federal law. It doesn't even include state or local laws. All that to tell you how to do right. No wonder we need lawyers. Why is it so hard to do right? Is it really hard? That's sort of the subtext for this passage from Mark, but more importantly, for this next 10 weeks of study of the Ten Commandments as well. Didn't God try to make it easy for us to live well? So we turn to Mark. Let's set the scene. In this section of Mark's gospel, Jesus has been at the temple in this, the last week of his life. And the scribes and Pharisees just couldn't leave him alone. There was one debate after another. Earlier on this day, Mark records challenges to Jesus' authority on paying taxes and on the resurrection from the dead. The scene was all about conflict. Indeed, in these last weeks of Jesus' life, there were constant challenges, one after the other, from the Pharisees and the scribes about the law. Those people were angry most of the time because Jesus almost always made them look bad. But a scribe came forward who not only was not mad, but who actually seemed to enjoy the answers Jesus was giving. This scribe gave Jesus credit for answering well. Now, scribes measured their worth in their expertness on the law. That was their job. Scribes often claimed to know what was right, even if they didn't, to save face and maybe save their job. What made this scribe different from the others was that he was willing to learn from someone else, an outsider, to acknowledge that maybe somebody else had something good to offer him. At least as far as law goes, and we can hear that and take it to heart. Not every know-it-all is really a know-it-all. The question he asked Jesus was a pretty standard sort of scribal question, the kind of thing that the scribes and Pharisees might, you know, sit around and debate for days on end. The question was also a standard part of the training of any Jewish male. You know, much like we used to train people with catechisms. Y'all remember the little pink book, don't you? Many of you? Right. See, everybody should have known the answer. The words, "Hear, O Israel," were all anyone needed to hear, because every adult male was expected to recite the whole saying from Deuteronomy about God, called the Shema, every single day upon rising. And that might not be a bad idea for us, you know, to recite some central scripture every morning when we get up. The thing here is, the question this scribe asked Jesus is a simple question, and it shouldn't have been hard to come up with an answer. Now, the scribe asked for the first commandment. The first of the Ten Commandments is, "You shall have no other gods besides me." Was that the right answer? Matthew, in his gospel, has the scribe asking, "Which is the greatest commandment?" It's a clarification that makes sense, because you could also translate Mark in the original here to say, "Which commandment has priority?" Which the word in the original language actually implies. Luke has Jesus turn the question back to the scribe, and the scribe answers correctly. Now, in all of this, you get the point. Everybody knows this answer, right? So no good church person of their day or ours should miss this question. If you didn't get it on the first try, you'd surely get it on the second. After all, if you're saying those words about God being one and how you'll love him every single day, then there's a certain duh factor here, isn't it? Jesus doesn't have a problem. He doesn't hesitate. He gets it right the first time. But then Jesus adds something new. To love of God, he adds something from Leviticus chapter 18, which you just heard read. Love your neighbor as yourself. And Mark is a little spare here. He doesn't tell us much more. In Matthew, Jesus says, a second is like it, meaning that the second command should be observed on a par with the first one. In Luke, the questioner supplies the answer. But then he questions Jesus on who his neighbor is. All right? And Jesus replies with the story of the Good Samaritan. See, what that scribe in Mark and all of Jesus' listeners, including us, should be getting from Jesus when he combines these two commandments to love is that loving God means loving your neighbor, no matter how hard that might be. That means that these two together are the greatest commandment. Matthew even concludes this story by having Jesus say, on this commandment hang all the law and the prophets. Okay, so why did all of these laws get made? Why is it that our simple U.S. Constitution had to be blown up from 11 pages to 200,000? It all comes down to this. People are self-centered. Preachers too. They don't want to worry about anyone else. They want what they want, and that's that. It's actually a pretty short-sighted view of things. If they'd have just lived by the simple principles, either our Constitution or Jesus' great commandment, then the heavy burden of law might not have ever developed then or now. Consider what Jesus said to do. Love God completely. Love your neighbor as yourself. And how do you do that? Loving God is all about showing gratitude to God for what he's given you, for what he's done. But how can you do that? God pretty much owns everything. So what can we give him that he doesn't already have? It has to be what we do. That's our gift. When you were a little kid, and I mean really young, 4 or 5 years old, what kinds of gifts did you give your parents? Do you remember? You might have made a mud pie and gave it to them, right? All right? Or you might have picked a bunch of dandelions from the yard and made an ice bouquet and gave it to your mom. Maybe you even made up some bowls of cereal and some instant coffee and took them breakfast in bed on a Saturday morning, right? You didn't have any money or anything of earthly worth to give. But those gifts were more special to your mom and dad than anything else. Go to any house with young children and look at the refrigerator, all right? You'll see artwork the kids did and gave to their parents as a present. And it wasn't because of any value in the artwork. I mean, it wasn't about any value in anything. I mean, what's the value of mud or weeds? The gift you were giving was you. That's the value. Okay, then what things will we do that'll be especially pleasing to God? We'll do things for and be right with our neighbors. If the gift you give is you, then you'll give yourself to your neighbors. That's why Jesus said, "And a second is like it," when he gave the love your neighbor commandment. It's like it because if we want to show God our love, we'll do it by loving our neighbor. That scribe knew it right away. "This is greater than all whole burnt offerings and sacrifices," he said. In other words, than all the things in their complicated law that had anything to do with pleasing God. I wonder what the world would have been like if humankind had stuck to that simple idea. Go back to Genesis 3, the so-called Fall of Man chapter. It tells us that Adam and Eve had been placed in the garden with the simplest of laws. One thing, all they were asked to do was not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That's it. They could do anything else they wanted to do and they'd continue to live in bliss. The authors of Genesis knew human nature as well as any modern anthropologist or sociologist. We always think about ourselves and what we want in the moment rather than what God wants. The serpent knew how to appeal to that in Eve, but don't blame the woman like Adam tried to do. He'd have done the same thing if the roles had been reversed. And their lives got more complicated and harder from that moment on. And the theology is, you and I, descendants of those first people, have behaved in the same way. But would we, can we, get back to the simple life under God that they had? In a very real sense, yes, we can. We do it by using these commandments of Jesus. Now notice I said use, not obey. I say that because I'm convinced God has a reason for these things, these laws, and especially these words from Jesus. Who would have known back there in 33 AD, when Jesus was speaking, that we'd have made our lives so complicated, made our lives so miserable for lack of clarity, that we'd wish for something easy to understand, easy to see as our basis for everything we do? Well, then why do we even need to have these 10 commandments we're going to start living into in the next 10 weeks? I think God was trying to give us something more, something to be guidelines that everybody could agree on. And so he did. The genius of these 10 laws is how they cover all of life. As I've mentioned before, the first three have to do with our relationship to God. And you better put those first. The fourth one transitions to us humans by being about humans and God. Do what you're supposed to do in relationship to your parents, to family, and God will do good for you. And then come the six that have to do with us. And all of them, if everybody followed him completely, would make life here like heaven. We really would have the life God intended, as our door hangers and our literature have said. Each is so powerful in its implications, each commandment, that I'll have no problem preaching them and teaching them well. Yet, you could also look at the Ten Commandments in light of Jesus' great commandment, and you see how they fit into the simple law Jesus laid on that scribe that day. If you obey those commandments, then you are loving God. The three of the ten even tell you how to do it specifically. And all of the rest have to do with loving your neighbor. As we go through the next 10 weeks, you're going to learn a lot, but you'll also see that these 10 commandments do fulfill this greatest commandment that Jesus gave. So do you understand now how powerful this great commandment is? If you will incorporate it into your life every day, well, you're just one step closer to the life God has in mind for you.